Dominic Dom Brightman, DTM, is an award-winning speaker and certified member with the John Maxwell team. He is the best-selling author of Going North, Tips and Techniques to Advance Yourself, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success, and a contributing author for Crappy to Happy, Sacred Stories of Transformational Joy. Dom hosts the Going North podcast, a top-rated self-help podcast that interviews authors from all over the world. His mantra is, advance others to advance yourself. In the episode, he has some great tips on how we can improve our mindset to make sure we stay resilient, and even give some advice if you're thinking about starting your own podcast. Let's find out what he's got to say. Welcome to the Turning Readers into Writers podcast, where we teach beginner writers how to find the time and the confidence to write their first novel. I'm your host, Emma Desi, and I'm very excited that you're here. Thank you for joining me today, because if you've been longing to write your novel for forever, then this is the place to be. Think of this as your weekly dose of encouragement, of hand-holding, and general cheerleading as you figure out how you're going to write your first novel. Trust me, as a mum of 3 young kids, I know how tricky it can be to tuck some time aside for yourself on a regular basis. And even when you do find that spare 5 minutes, you can feel so overwhelmed that no writing gets done. Trust me, I have been there, but this podcast is going to help you in practical ways, because once a week I'll be delivering an episode that gives you steps to building a writing routine, encouragement to build your confidence, and cheerleading until you reach the end. Okay, let's start. Well, Dominic, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm thrilled to have you on the show.
Woohoo! Thrilled to be here with you, Emma. Thrilled here to be with you.
Now, I was interested that you've said that you were a voracious reader, and I wonder, you know, since an early age, and I wonder what it was in those early days that drew you towards to books and stories, and maybe you could share some of your favorites with us.
Sure thing. So what drew me to becoming a voracious reader, funny enough, was actually dealing with life setbacks, because with I'm pretty sure like we've all had books that we've been forced to read in grade school that we didn't like to read, and it made me hate reading at one point. And funny enough, this was even after getting a part-time job at a library, no less, that actually having some setbacks in life where there were some miscommunication issues with the boss, among some other things of dealing with some family issues, that led me to realize, you know what, something has to change. And in life, at least once minimum, we're all going to have a desire to change. And that led me to the leadership section of the library, picked up a book by John C. Maxwell. And then that just led me down the rabbit hole of really loving books again. Mm-hmm. And just reading great books, like Thinking for a Change, that's one of them. Definitely a great book. Like, no matter who you are, what your background is, that's a definitely good book, because we can all pick up some tips on how to become a better thinker. And heck, even especially when it comes to writing, where that is a mind process, it's a mental process. And heck, even one of my favorite questions from that book is, what good will I do today? And just getting your mind ready to do something good and thinking on something positive and setting your intention for the day. And heck, even The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, like that's one of the few fiction books that I've read in the past years that I've really enjoyed, and just stuff like that to really get yourself going. So really just setbacks in life and falling in love of reading, because like no matter what the book is, like you can learn from it, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, where you can learn something new that you can apply to your life and change your life for the better and not butter.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. It was doing a lot of those sort of mindset, reading a lot of the mindset books and trying to change my thinking. That's one of the things that prompted me to get my writing life in gear and kind of decide, okay, do I want this or do I not? And so it's nice that the skills that we can learn perhaps from one industry, we can then transfer them into another industry that's more relevant to ourselves. But that's interesting. You said that you were working in a library, because libraries, well, in the UK, I don't know about in the States, but in the UK, they're a bit of a hot topic right now, because
there's less and less funding for them, but it's still something that we need. And the big debate around it is, are they still relevant in today's world in the 21st century? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up because I really get a chance to talk about it, because from working in the public library for 13 years in the States, like it, I'm not sure how it is for the UK, but they are huge community centers, especially with the huge sky high unemployment rates, even before COVID, that we had, we're dealing with, where people are still looking for jobs. And the thing is, like with libraries, especially public ones, like from cradle to the grave, we basically serve everyone, getting folks to really get into the reading early. Then when they become teenagers, doing some teen programs with them, college, they may need some textbooks or some extra books or the research papers. And adults, heck, even when they have kids, a place to take their kids to. And when they're senior citizens, they may get some new technology where tech-savvy librarians now, where that's basically a requirement to help folks get more used to using their iPad, their tablet, or the smartphone or something like that. And heck, even some folks who actually didn't plan too well for life and are still looking for employment even after retirement. So it's one heck of a community resource. And heck, even in the States with COVID, thanks to the county funding, we actually were able to extend our Wi-Fi to reach the parking spots at the parking lots of our buildings. So that way folks can actually still use the internet during COVID, because not everybody has high speed internet. Mm-hmm. And it's really just stuff like that. Heck, even right now, like there's even a small program where we actually give free meals to kids in the school district during this whole pandemic thing, because a lot of kids, like the school is really where they got their chance to eat. So basically being a community resource for people, that's probably the biggest argument, and maybe making that transfer of thinking it as a place of just for books and card catalogs when those probably don't even exist anymore, most libraries, to really seeing it as a big resource where it's not just books, it's the people behind the books. Like you and myself are both authors. There's humans behind these pages here, whether they're gone or still here. And those folks have at least went to library at least once to check out a book, and they were inspired by that. And just use that as a community inspirational hub to help folks realize, like, hey, libraries are still needed. It can be a community resource. It's not just a storehouse for books. It's an information sanctuary.
Yeah, I think we're not quite as far down that track as you guys are over there, but we're certainly moving towards it being more of a community hub. So I hope that helps, and it will in the long run keep libraries there, and keep, because there are people who need them, as you say. Now, you wrote your first book when you were at the tender age of 23. So what made you feel that you wanted to write a book at that point in your life, and how did you go about actually doing the writing of it?
Sure thing. So after the whole voracious reading rebirth of basically dealing with some life setbacks, I went to a Toastmasters meeting. And for those who don't know, Toastmasters International, nonprofit organization, basically go and become a better speaker and communicator and a leader. And there was this one club I visited out in Cadenceville, and they had a guest speaker that evening by the name of Daniel Alley. And he was around 25 at the time, and I was around a good 21. And he gave this speech on how to act like a leader. And his acronym for that actually went to being audacious, contagious, and tenacious. And for those that are writing, you have to be audacious enough to actually set out to write a book. And then you have to be audacious enough to hit publish. And then you have to actually be audacious enough to go out there and promote the book. That's another thing too. You can write all day, you can publish books all day, but if no one knows about it, then what's the point? And you have to be contagious. You have to basically market yourself and then get to the point where you're contagious enough in a good way that folks know about you enough. And then you have to be tenacious to keep going no matter what happens with all the setbacks that happen. And now, granted, that wasn't the version he gave, but that was the same three words. And he had this book called You Are the Boss. And I was like, wow, like it, like this guy's a couple years older than me, millennial, still got glasses and didn't have all the extra weight back then, skinny as me and everything. And he had this book. I bought the book from him, went home, read it. And I was like, this guy's writing about the same stuff I'm reading about. So that inspired me to eventually write a book and I came across another book called The Magic of Getting What You Want. And in that book, it mentioned how you should write your own personal obituary. Well, for some reason, I wrote that I was going to be a best-selling author of multiple books. And after that activity, a couple more months down the line, I met this wonderful lady and I was handing out these wonderful reading lists to people called the 100 Books for Dynamic Living, as opposed to business cards, because business cards usually go in the trash. And if your face isn't on them and folks don't remember it, then good luck with that. And she looked at the list. She looked right back at me, looked at the list, looked right back at me, and then asked me where my name was on this list. And I was like, my name's not on the list because I'm not an author. And she was like, hey, why don't you write a book? And I'm like, I think I'm good. Imagine this is after the obituary activity. I was like, I'm not going to do it. And she was like, hey, you know what? Even better. How about a year from today? How about we both write books? And a year from today, we can say we're both published authors. And I was like, it sounds a little too intense. I think I'm good. And then after that conversation ended, I basically did some soul searching and realized, you know what? Maybe I should probably write this book because I did some deep thought. I was like, I did put this in the obituary. Why don't I go on ahead and actually go ahead and make this thing happen? So that was around 2015, that year when the dare happened. And then October 2016, right before November 1st hit, since that was the day that that conversation happened, my first book was published, because I basically still took her up on that dare, even though we never really shook hands to make it official, because I had to wake up and realize, like, hey, because it's like sometimes you don't get things instantly the first time. Sometimes you need another knock on the head or sometimes to process some things.
Yeah, so maybe it sounds like there was that little bit of, and we all get it, don't we, that little bit of fear that says, oh, no, I'm not ready for this. I can't do it yet. And then it takes a moment to galvanize and think, okay, do I want this? Is this on my obituary? Right, I've got to step up to the plate and I've got to do it. So that's really interesting. It took you about a year to do. So how did you actually go about writing the book? Did you pen and paper, computer, dictate? How did you do it?
Definitely the first two, the pen and paper, then the computer, because that soul searching moment happened in one of those Toastmaster meetings where there's a Q&A session that was required for the presentation. And my buddy of mine who wrote a book of his own asked me in the Q&A session, like, hey, Don, when's your book? Now, mind you, that question had nothing to do with the presentation I was giving at all. So he just saw his opportunity just to put a fire into my butt. And when I went ahead and declared in that meeting that was going to happen, I ran home and started writing furiously. I wrote like 14 pages of raw content, like whatever was came to me as a stream of consciousness. The pen was on fire. And then I went through like a little hibernation period for a few weeks, because that was November. That was like November when that happened. Then December happened. And then January 2016, I picked up the book project again and set out every weekend to get in the coffee shop. And that's another thing about writing. You got to be in your own place of productivity to write. Like if you need a place with ambient noise, like a coffee shop, or just have music on your headphones. Like I listen to music a lot when I write, because it usually provokes like a lot of different thought and helps me to remind me of certain things. And really just taking and set aside a time to write, like in one of the episodes where you mentioned how you have to have a writing routine and time management is definitely a requirement. Like really just being aware of how much time you have and using it to your advantage and scheduling it. Because that's really where the magic happens, because every weekend after work, I set aside time to write. And also, I would keep pen and paper with me in my car. So that way, if something happened to me, especially after a workout session, because if you sweat, you're eventually going to have something to come out of your head that inspire you, and just basically ink it when I thought it. So ink it when you think it, when it comes to mind like that. So that was really part of it. And the other piece was basically typing in all the stuff I wrote down. So I'm basically editing my thoughts as I'm going around before actually submitting it to an editor. And that was the process for book number one, because with the writing, it's a lot faster than typing, at least for me. And usually it's a lot, not only is it faster, it actually sticks a lot better when you see it on paper in your own eyes. And then as you type it in, you'll be like, oh God, what influence was I under when I was writing this? And you're like, oh God, no, let me go ahead and change this up and polish it up and make it even better. So there was actual writing happening with the book. There was still writing and typing.
Now that's very similar to myself, actually. I kind of agree that I love that bit of handwriting. There's a connection between the brain and the hand, isn't there? And you can just let it all out. And then when you transcribe it onto the computer, it's like having that first edit and you can start to shape things and tidy them up. So yeah, we work in a similar way. I like that. Now I kind of tell my students that having the right mindset, being in the right frame of mind, is half the battle to writing your book, no matter whether it's fiction, nonfiction, memoir, whatever, because it takes resilience and it takes commitment. Because it's, for most of us, it takes quite a while to write a book. It's not something you do in a couple of days. And I wonder if you have any thoughts on some of the ways that writers can perhaps develop a more positive mental attitudes towards their writing.
Yes indeed. So for positive mindset, to develop it, I like to drop the rave method. That's something that I use for rock solid optimism, and the acronym RAVE stands for R. So the R is for reading great material. So make sure you read Emma's books and a bunch of other great books out there. The A is for audio immersion. So if you're listening to this podcast right now, then you get a gold star. And then there's the V for visual stimulation, where you're making sure you're having your eyes set on something positive every day, like having quotes, like heck, even I'll even pull off one of these sticky notes I got right here. I'm not sure if folks will be able to see it on the Zoom thing. It says always focus on the payoff, where I basically keep inspirational quotes and sayings, because heck, even Daniel actually brought him on as my coach at the time when I went to his home. Like, he had him and his girlfriend had sticky notes everywhere of goals and inspirational sayings. So you basically have to have your environment ready, kind of like with the POP, the place of productivity earlier. When you're being in your place of productivity, it's got to be in a place where creativity is allowed to flow. It's making sure it's an area where it's not too much cluttered. Because I've actually talked to a declutter expert before, a couple of them, and they said things which I agree with, is the fact that creativity flows a lot better in an open room where it's not cluttered. Because if the room's cluttered, you're thinking, it's like, oh crap, I got these books everywhere, got all these darn papers everywhere. It's like making sure your space for writing is clean and open and ready for you to take action and letting that creativity flow. And of course, the E is encouragement, encouraging yourself and others, because it's great to encourage other people. We all need it, and it'll pay off where it'll come back down to you down the line. And we always have to encourage ourselves too, especially when we get up in the morning and actually doing the business for ourselves and still having a day job to fund our creativity habits, because very few folks make money off of writing. And if they make money off of writing, it's because of all the systems they have around it. Like a bunch of big name authors, you pay attention and do some studies on them. Heck, even folks in the personal development space, like Brandon Burchard, like he basically buys all of his books himself, gives them away to people, and they sign them to his online courses. Like James Patterson, he has a bunch of ghostwriters with them writing all these books, cranking about almost like crazy, probably a book a day almost, it feels like, with him. It's like rabbits. Heck, even Joanna Penn, with all the stuff that she does, like she has a podcast, the audiobook, and uses her one book to create multiple streams of income. So basically remembering yourself to encourage yourself. So just a quick recap of it: the R, reading great material; A, audio immersion; V, visual stimulation; and E, encouragement, encouraging yourself and others. And that's how you can stay positive.
That's a great acronym. I love that. That's superb. I'll be remembering that one.
Sweet.
Now, just kind of following on from that slightly, you've said that there are three skills that millennials in particular need to develop, which, as I am long past being a millennial, kind of amused me. So I wonder if you could share that with us. And I wonder if they're also applicable to the writing life.
Yes, they are. One of them is building strong relationships, especially with people of high value. Now, everyone is valuable. Everyone is. I'm not saying no one's more valuable than another, but I'm just saying there are some people on a scale, they may be a one, and some may be an eight. You want to be around more eights than ones, because some ones are those who may have not gotten over certain things, and they try to spread their misery around others. So making sure that you're around people that'll that are actually positive now actually help you, and heck, even call you out on your BS from time to time that help you to be better. So building those relationships, and it applies to writing, because in this big, small world of the internet, if you pay attention to people, like a lot of folks are starting these podcasts nowadays, like the book itself, the writing's one thing. Like it, I think there's still a part of the world where they think the writing is the hard part. Yeah, it's hard, especially for a fiction book, because you have to have all these characters and stories have to make sense. And really, you have the main character mind, but every side character thinks of the main character in the story. But you have to also like keep the relationship thing in mind, because there may be like podcasts, like Emma's podcast. You may want to get onto hers, just listening and subscribing to hers and sharing her posts and everything. So that way you can be on the radar. And if you do it enough, and then when you get closer and closer to your book release, then you'll have one outlet to get your message out there, because you still have to promote your work. And heck, even strangers are sometimes the new family in a way. Like there's this one quote where it says that friends are God's way of apologizing for your family. And that's depending on your situation, of course. And just having those relationships with wonderful people and building them up is definitely skill number one. Skill number two is communication, and that can go in multiple ways, because there's written communication, of course, writing a book, verbal communication, public speaking, and of course, the selling of your stuff as well, and that can branch off into copywriting and so many other skills. So communication would be number two, and number three would basically be financial literacy, because that's something that a lot of folks aren't taught in schools. Like I remember, I'm not even sure if folks got into public schools in the States, but I had a consumer math course, and that was like 12th grade. And that was 12th grade. And that was one class. Like, God forbid, who knows what they may have gotten in the public area, because to be honest, depending on the area, some schools don't teach the things that people should know. So the three skills would be building strong relationships, especially with high value people, communication, written, verbal, and all that other good stuff, as well as a third one, which would be financial literacy.
Financial literacy, that's so important and so, I think, undervalued. And certainly here in the UK, we stop doing any kind of, we have the option to stop doing any kind of sums or maths at the age of 16. But even a lot of what we're taught in those classes, it's not relevant to your day-to-day life and trying to manage a budget and live within your means. So, I would love to see a big overhaul in that. I keep thinking I might be a rich woman by now if I'd known more at a younger age. Maybe not. But anyway.
There's still wealth that awaits you.
hopefully. I'm going for it. Now, you have a podcast too called Going North. Tell us about the podcast and why you started it.
Sure thing. So the podcast was an original idea. I was going to start that before ever writing a book was on my radar. Because folks have been telling for years, I got this great voice radio. And I'm like, all right, cool. All right, it's a podcast. And that should be a good way to use it for good. I didn't know what the hell my podcast was going to be about. But I decided, you know what, let me just go ahead and start one. Then after publishing my book in 2016, 6 months after it was published, I lost my father after his long battle with Alzheimer's. And I slacked off on the marketing for obvious reasons, grief and everything. And I realized, you know what, I should probably get back to marketing this book here. It's my first one. And I said, I got another one coming out 2 years after that. So why don't I start a podcast? And after talking with a buddy of mine, and that kind of goes with the whole relationship building thing, I talked it over with a buddy of mine over coffee. And she was like, hey, why don't you call your podcast the Going North Podcast? Because they basically have a brand here, because Going North, that's usually my response to people when they ask me, how's it going? And the book is called Going North. So why don't you make the podcast Going North? I'm like, you know what? I think I'll do that, because I was originally going to call it the Mr. Music and Reads podcast. And it just ended up being about that. And then basically every Monday and Thursday, a new episode goes up. It's an interview with an author, different author, no matter what the genre. Well, of course, if it's politics or something, I don't like to delve into politics, especially with it being election year. People are kind of going stark raving mad this year. but usually if it's, except for like politics, or maybe something dark, like most folks, like it, I've had multiple authors on my show. I'm about 331 episodes in so far. And every Monday and Thursday, a new episode goes up. I've interviewed a bunch of authors before, fiction, nonfiction. And of course, Emma, you're always welcome to come on the show too, because I'm always looking to return the favor for fellow bookcasters to really get their message out there, because it's bigger than me. It's like, yeah, I want to promote my work, but this is really a better way to promote myself as a brand as well, because podcasting, there's a million podcasts out there and not everybody's going to keep their podcast up. Like, there's that pod fading thing where folks have a few episodes up and then they feel like, you know what? I'm not a millionaire yet. I don't see a Joe Rogan contract, so I'm going to quit. Even though Joe Rogan has a whole life outside of his show for decades before he even got that contract. So really the podcast happened because I wanted a new way to market my book. But to make it bigger than me, I made it all about having a place, make a platform for authors to get their voices heard, because that's something I needed when I first published my book, because no one knows what they're doing. Like, you can know everything in the world and still not know what you're doing, because you're stuffed to apply a certain tactic, a certain action to a certain specific time of the day, and then reassess what happened after that action happened. So that's basically where the podcast came from.
That's fantastic. Yeah, we need them spaces. There can't be enough spaces for new authors coming up and trying to find a space for ourselves, especially when, you know, if for the indie world, particularly when there's so many plates to spin at one time, whether it be the craft of writing, the publishing, the promoting, all the rights side of it. There's such a lot to sort of take in. So I'm always looking for good podcasts. So I shall certainly be adding you to my subscribe button. Now, if we've got anybody listening out there who perhaps has written a nonfiction book or has a love of a particular genre, for example, historical romance, for example, and they're thinking, yes, do you know what? I love this topic and I'd love to start a podcast about it. What tips might you give somebody who's thinking about dipping their toe in the water?
Sure thing. So knowing your why is definitely the main thing, because that's what's going to keep you going. Like, if money is your reason for starting a podcast, then look for something else. Like, you have a better chance of network marketing than a podcast if you want to make money from it. And getting your why is definitely the main thing. And knowing your audience is something that I wish I would have known when I started my podcast, because after watching other folks in the podcast space, I realized, you know what? I kind of messed up that thing, because it on one hand, it's like, you know what? Maybe I screwed up in a bit because I didn't know exactly who my audience was. It's like, oh, it's just everybody. And there's the phrase of, if you're speaking to everyone, you're not speaking to no one. And at the same time, it's like, you know what? At the same time, I want to keep it diverse for people. So knowing your why, knowing your audience, and always promoting your work too, because like that, like with anything you do, you can't just put something up there once and then just wait for folks to walk past and just grab like 10 million copies of it or press download 5,000 times at once on it. Like, you have to actually get out there and do the work, like with the mindset work. Like, it's, you have to have the right mindset going in, and definitely while you're in the trenches, so to speak, with it. So basically knowing your why you want to do it, and basically knowing your audience for the work, and heck, even as another tip, like going where other folks have gone. Like, one of the past guests on my show, she actually mentioned how one question she wished she'd be asked more often, instead of how do I become a best-selling author, is how do I become a great author? And one thing you can do that is by paying attention to those in your space, like with historical fiction or historical romance. Like check out the genre, head over to Goodreads and see some of the top authors in that space, see what they do and see what the folks are commenting on that page, and then serving them. And you basically can find your own metaphorical congregation if you add value first and see what they like, see what they dislike. And if you can add something that they're looking for that author isn't giving them, that'll give you another edge. So those are just a few things that I wish I would have known starting my podcast. And for authors who want to go the bookcasting route of not only being a book writer / author, but also a podcaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's great that you get started, though. I think half of the battle sometimes is just getting started, and then you can learn as you go along. And the advantage of being an unknown is that you can make a lot of mistakes before you start to build any real audience and following, and try and learn from them as best you can. And so I've got two sort of follow-up questions. One would be, you produce a twice-weekly podcast, so that's a lot of work. How do you fit that in around everything else? Do you have a team that works with you, or are you a bit of a lone ranger like me?
Lone ranger like you. Definitely a lone ranger swag, because I've gotten better with the editing over the years, because like when I first started, the editing was hell. My tech didn't work properly, and my guest's sound wasn't as great. So I outsourced the first episode because I didn't know what the heck was I was doing. And then eventually, as I watched enough YouTube videos and followed enough, where I got to the place where I'm comfortable with editing, and heck, even getting over my semi-perfect hearing of hearing every that the guest says, I eventually got over basically the editing piece and just still doing it. So I usually fit that in. Like with the editing, it usually takes, I'd say, a good half hour if I do a deep focus with it. Now, if it's one of those long episodes, then of course it's going to take an hour or two. And heck, even sometimes just basically putting aside time, my schedule is like, okay, hey, this is the first edit. I'm going to put the music in, the intro, and everything else in at once, and just having things preset, like have a few preset intros, have a few outros already pre-recorded, and just rotate them out. Mm-hmm. And then with the actual interview piece in the middle, like the meat in the middle, just editing any background noise and things like that. That's really how I do it, just making the time for it. Because we all have the same amount of time. We just have to choose what we decide to put in it. You have to really kind of schedule everything in a way. And I've actually become more reliant on my Google Calendar more than before, because I've noticed that a lot of folks recently mentioned how to-do lists, even though they're great starting out, after a while they keep getting bigger and bigger, and all these rabbits, aka tick marks, appear on the list, and you're like, oh crap, I'm gonna get this done, as opposed to schedule where you set aside some time to do it. So basically scheduling just about everything and setting aside time to do it, and that even having fun with going back in the conversation and writing things down that you didn't hear the first time.
Yeah. No, scheduling. I'm a big believer in scheduling, and it disappoints me sometimes that I do, because I used to think of myself as quite a rebellious person who just went by the seat of their pants, and now everything is on the calendar. And I don't know if it's just a sign of age or just being more organized. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Organized, not aged. It's organized.
Now, my second follow-up question to that was, you talked about, you know, it's all very well making the product, whether it be a book or a podcast episode, where you've got to let people know about it. So where can people find out about your podcast and your books online?
Sure thing. So if you head over to dombrightman.com, dombrightman.com, you'll find everything about me, the podcast, and all things Dom and everybody else that knows about Dom, been on the show. And if you head over to that wonderful website, you'll get a free gift called the 21 Lessons Learned from 2+ Years of Podcasting. It's my gift to your wonderful audience, wonderful listeners. For those who are looking to start a podcast and want to get a nice little glimpse of what's really behind the scenes of it. So, yep, dombrightman.com.
That's lovely. Well, Dom, thank you so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. Thank you.
Woohoo! Right back at you, Emma. I appreciate you.
Before you go, I wanted to tell you about my Patreon page. Whenever anyone supports the show, it expresses just how much you're enjoying the content and how much you want it to continue. Your support helps maintain the podcast and keeps it going. It means I can create better resources for you when you're listening to the podcast or checking out the webpage. It means I can focus on getting a higher reach of audience. And when we get a higher reach of audience, we can get more guests. Guests that are really going to help you. And then who knows where it'll go from there. As a new podcaster and someone who's starting out and finding their feet in the podcasting world, just as I'm helping you find your feet in the writing world, I can't do it alone. I always need help, so I'd love it if you would support the show by signing up. There's just one tier, $3 a month, and for that, I'll make sure that each week I'm delivering the best podcast I can for you. And as a way of saying thanks, I'll give you a personal shout out on the show. So check out the page at patreon.com/EmmaDesi. That's patreon.com/EmmaDesi. See you next time.